Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and we are here for our IRSPT just bonus Q&A coaching call. It's a call I threw in because we are right now just beginning the metabolic reset on the Be4Be Gone program, and I thought this would be a good time if you had any questions about how to proceed with your clients, if you are taking a client through it, or even if you're just going through it yourself, just questions about how to coach people through this process. And I really feel strongly that when you go through the process yourself, you're going to be so much better at coaching them because you'll have the feelings, the emotions, you'll know what it's like. So I have no agenda other than that. So I will open it up for questions. It looks like Byari had already typed in a few, so I'll handle those. And then you know the drill. If you have any questions, raise your hand with a *2, and that will let me see that you have a question, and I'll answer it. And if you are on the web and you have a question, just go ahead and type it in. And no question is off limits. Any questions related to the program at all, whether it's from the very beginning, first part, or all the way up through now, or before a metabolic reset, or anything at all that you want me to share about insulin and insulin resistance and this amazing hormone that has so much control over so many aspects of our life. So let me go back to Byari's question. Byari said they've just started selling something called Soul Warrior here in Australia as a cheaper alternative to Sun Warrior and would love your opinions. Ingredients include flavors. The ingredients are organic, bio-fermented, raw-sprouted, whole grain, brown rice protein, L-carnitine, vanilla, bean or cocoa, flavors, xanthan gum, and stevia. However, on another website, it says it includes polydextrose as a source of fiber. Interesting. I'm going to click on the link that she gives because it sounds quite interesting. Dextrose is a derivative of starch. Why would they put polydextrose in, and especially since they're at organic and they seem to have other good ingredients? But I'm just going to take a quick look. Dextrose is often from corn. It can sometimes be from wheat. So hopefully the thing says, let me see if it says gluten-free. Polydextrose, source of fiber. Oh, poldextrose. That's interesting. Let's see. I don't know whether that would be an issue with. You'd have to look, too. I don't see that here on the website that you sent me to, but look to see what the amount of carbohydrate in it. That could be a clue as well as to whether that is. And the other thing, it doesn't say anywhere on there, as far as I can see, and it's again, they don't have a big picture of it, whether it's gluten-free and corn-free, because dextrose can be from either. I remember buying something from a very reputable company, Dragon Herbs, and they had these little canisters of, they called them T-E, and they had astragalus T-E and hoshawu and a bunch of different herbs. I thought, wow, these are really cool. So I got them, I ordered them, and I look at the label, and it says it has dextrose from either corn or wheat. They're like, may contain gluten. How could they do that, you know? So I would really research it from that perspective, Byari. Let's see. All right. Any other questions typed in? Yeah, we have a few others. Eleanor says, do we get 2 months access to the Vital Community, and when does that start? Yeah, the Vital Community has turned out to be a big headache for us in terms of that. Yes, you do get 2 months access to it. And we thought it better to start it after this ended because you have so many calls between Be4Be Gone and this that why would you need some extra calls? So we thought we'd give you till the end of so before, and this ends in December, and then give you January and February free 3 months in Vital. If you want it sooner, we were trying to figure that out. I'm not sure what the story or what if there was any resolution, and but that's what the plan is. And Eleanor says, on page 38 of rounds 4, you state, rarely if ever below fasting level within 2 hours or more after a meal. Does that mean within the first 2 hours or anything after a meal? Yeah, I'm pretty much saying that if your glucose goes down below your fasting level substantially, I don't mean like 2 or 3 points because that's just operator error, you know, the machinery is not that precise. But if it goes down, so say you start out a meal and your fasting is, say, 80, and you eat a meal and it goes up, and maybe it doesn't go up all that high, it goes up to 98 and then it comes back down, but then it comes back down to 60. That's an issue. That's a reactive hypoglycemia type issue. So you're going to have to really just be there. There's no fast rules about that. You're going to have to ask questions about that. Did the person feel lightheaded and kind of off? How much below the fasting level did it go? If it went from 80 and, you know, but 2 hours later it was at 75, that's probably not an issue. So it's only when it goes substantially below. And other than eating foods that, there are certain foods that will bring your glucose down. You can have, say, for some people, even a quarter of an avocado will bring their glucose down into a normal level, or eating chia seeds or whatever when it goes high. So depending, you know, you have to use that one with a grain of salt. Okay, so let's go back to the phone. And we have Eleanor has her hand up. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, so that really has to do with my question and with my client, because he does have a high morning glucose, and he does go down during the day, and I looked at it. It can be anywhere from 37, 26. I did like all this math, 26, 28, 9. You know, so his glucose during the day, I'm trying to use the right adjective here, is lower than his fasting a lot of times.
But is his fasting high? You're saying his fasting is high.
Yeah, his fasting is high. So
that kind of changes it a little bit. Like, say you're talking to somebody who has a normal fasting glucose, and then they're going even below that during the day. That can be a problem. But if somebody has diabetic-type fasting insulin, the glucose, say they're 120, and throughout the day you're getting them to eat all these great foods that are maybe bringing it down, and they get down to 100, that I'm not concerned about.
Okay, I was hoping that was the answer. Mm-hmm. Now, he actually started back on September 29th, so he's ready. He was thinking November 1st, I'm finished, right? And so I'm at the point right now where I have to advise him. And basically, he's gained 1 inch on his chest. He's actually gained an inch on his chest. He's lost an inch around the waist. He lost an inch on the thigh. He lost 10 pounds in the first 2 weeks, but then October 13th, he stayed at the same weight from October 13th till today. And he was taking his blood very consistently for the first 3 weeks, but his hands started hurting, so he stopped. But he's consistently been taking his supplements. He's doing good on the sleep timing. He just started the stress daily activity. I would describe him as a weekend warrior. He does burst in the morning and the evening and maybe walk one flight of stairs during the day. But he's really, for the major exercise, most of the time it happens on the weekend.
On the weekend, yeah.
Yeah. He says he has more energy, a little better concentration. His clothes fit better. Overall well-being is improved, but he still craves coffee. He is still sleepy in the afternoon, and he thinks the coffee is more of a habit because it's really the only thing that gives him this feeling of well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And his blood sugar started out from like the beginning when we started measuring September 19th. And through October 1st, his blood sugar ranged in the morning fasting from 108 to 138. And the 138 was after a dinner that he had a very bad reaction to, which was just chicken and kale. I don't know why it went up into the 150s. But then after October 2nd, his fasting blood dropped below 110, except for 1 or 2 days. And then October 106, it dropped below 100 for 3 days, but then it jumped back up over 100, and it was up there till recently. We got it for the last few days down below 100. So I'm kind of not thinking.
Making progress, but he's not done. He's nowhere near done.
Okay, so what would you advise for him going forward?
Okay, do you have it on the web? If you can't, if you do, turn it off. Turn it down, because I can hear myself echoing back.
Okay, I had a, is that better?
Let me see. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
So here he is. He started out much higher. He has gotten his glucoses down. A couple of things I would ask. When we see a pattern where they come down and then they go back up again, I would be really asking them carefully about their sleep. Because there was a study that I just sticks in my mind because it was so profound. Now, this guy with the 118 or whatever, 112, 118, somewhere in the teens, blood sugar, I can still hear myself echoing.
Yeah, I have it on mute. I have the thing on mute. Well, you know what? It could be my headset. Let me take my headset off. Hold on.
Okay, let's try that.
How is that?
Really, I definitely hear the echo coming when you speak. So
you do. So it must be on her. I mean, that's better, I think.
I took my headset off.
Yeah,
okay.
It must have been your headset.
Okay.
Headset. All right. Yeah. So so you know, everybody's at a different starting point. So when they start to go, wow, everything's good, they're getting down, and then their blood sugars start to go up again in the morning, I start to think, we want to look at the food, right? That's the first thing we want to look at, what they eat the day before, and did they stop taking their supplements? But a biggie is asleep. And I recall this one study that just struck me so powerfully, the guy with the one teens kind of blood sugar in the morning, and they got him to do 9 hours of sleep a night. And over the course of like 4 or 5 days, his blood sugar came down into good, you know, not excellent, but in the 90s. And
okay. He
was maintaining there. And then you saw his blood sugar shoot back up again. And those were days, it wasn't even bad sleep, but he got 7.5 hours of sleep instead of 9 hours of sleep. And it brought his fasting blood sugars came up. So those are things to really ask people about. And it seems people are really, like, defensive about that. Well, I'm doing everything right, you know. Okay, so big deal about the sleep. Yeah, big deal about the sleep. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it is a big deal. It is a big deal. That could be the only thing out of balance. So it's really looking at all those factors. And if he really wants to get results, like, okay, he wants to be done. Like, what does that mean, be done? Go back to what he was doing before and expect the change. I would ask him, have you reached your goals? So
his goal is to get into normal fasting range. That's his goal.
Okay. So then,
is that possible? I guess first is the question.
Yeah, it could very well be, but he may have to work harder at it, right?
Yeah.
If he's got genetic tendencies there, or if it's been there for a long time, and he's clean about the gluten free and the dairy free and staying off
his food is excellent. The only thing that makes me think more about that is that he's really to the metabolic syndrome type stage. And that maybe I needed to do something to clean out his gut or so I've been coming across things for myself because I've been looking at this bone stuff about diatomaceous earth and there was PGX or something I was also reading about. These are kind of things that they say PGX I think was the name of it. Clean out the gut, that maybe I need to get him on some kind of supplement or some kind of thing that would maybe clean the gut out. I don't know if
that's a possibility, but you're saying that you also said earlier that he's still having the coffee. He's connected with the coffee.
No, that's the only thing he craves, because I went through his assessment again and asked him all his questions again.
He's not drinking it. He just craves it.
No, he won't. He's been really good.
Okay.
He had, you know, they had Halloween parties, everything. He hasn't touched
good.
Anything.
Good. Good for him. So he's doing
He is, and he's tired at night, so he goes to bed at 10, you know. He has to get up at 5 because he has to get to work. So I'm wondering if you're telling me I need to ask him to somehow increase his sleep hours, which might be
difficult.
If he's
getting up at 5, ask him if he is sleeping all the way through the night or if he's –
He wakes up with night sweats.
Oh.
He did tell me that.
So
and he does.
How old is he?
He'll be going to be 60 this year coming up, so he's 59.
He's waking up with night sweats. That, to me, says there's a hormonal imbalance. Plus, if he's getting that draggy in the afternoon, I'll be looking at his adrenals as well.
Okay.
Next. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I've been really pushing him on the exercise, but you think it's more the sleep and...
Well, no, it could be the exercise. I just threw out the sleep as one possibility, but if he's not really doing the exercise, that could be it. So you look at all the pieces. If you go back to the notes that we had for the fourth part, which was when you're transitioning them, okay, it's the 30 days is over, and they're saying, okay, now what? It's not like now what, you're done. It's okay, let's see where you're at. And what can we do? If they want to start adding some foods in that they've taken out, maybe they tolerate. But it's hard to tell because his glucose hasn't come into normal range yet.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I think I could probably get a few more weeks out of him, but as Thanksgiving's approaches, I'm not sure what I'm going to be able to do there. So that's why I'm really – I know it's difficult for people that work and they get home at 7. You know, they got to go to bed at 10 and get up at 5 where they exercise, right? So,
well, can he exercise – are there stairs at work that he could run
on? Well, he tells me once a day he does use the stairs and uses a restroom on another floor. But that's really all that he can find. He's in management, so that's kind of most he's been able to do. So
he doesn't get a lunch break where he could take part of his lunch break, like 2 or 3 minutes of his lunch break?
Yeah, and walk around. That's what I've been trying to – he actually last week, because I was, talking about the exercise, he actually got out in the nighttime. He would come home and eat and went out in the dark and walked around.
The other piece of it is if he can do it somehow inside, but that piece of to get that fasting glucose down in the morning, doing that exercise like 2 hours after dinner.
Yeah, he does do the 2-minute burst an hour before bed. Yeah,
okay.
Because I knew, because you said that, I was really telling him, let's definitely do that, because she said that really gets down in the morning, and that's what we're shooting for here. So.
Right. And so you said you did get it below 100 in the morning. But it's not steady. It's not consistent.
It was several days. It was in the 90s, and then it shot up for about a week. And now this week I've got it back down in the 90s in the morning. But, so I got it
good.
For the last 3 days. I did get it back down in the 90s. So that's what I guess I'm going to tell him. We need to keep going. And I don't want to give him unrealistic expectations. If it's possible for us to get it into normal, which I would say is below 90 for him, would be normal, right?
Yeah, I would, but you're going to probably, you may have to look at other things. If he's already into metabolic syndrome, it's going to take longer, obviously, for somebody who's already into a metabolic syndrome. So you've got to be looking at his lipids and things to lower the lipids. And then you also can look at how some of the other supplements. Have you looked at, say, berberine and olive leaf? They've had some really good studies to show that they work as well as metformin at bringing down glucose.
No, I haven't looked at looked at berberine. So that
would be the one you would suggest.
Yeah.
I would say berberine's an easy good one to start with there, because there's been so many clinical trials. 500 milligrams 3 times a day.
Okay.
And also just look at the other list of stuff, and maybe since you know he's got the fatigue in the afternoon, he may have some digestive stuff. He definitely has some lipid stuff if he's into the metabolic syndrome piece.
He's got cholesterol.
Yeah, so you look at what else can you do for that. I mean, you might experiment with something like niacin, which can help with the cholesterol and may help with the blood glucose, but you got to watch it and have him test carefully, because niacin is one of those kind of like valerian, where most people get a certain response of relaxation, but some people get stimulated. That happens with niacin, that some people actually have their blood sugars go up with it. But it's
and
really
he's taken it in the combination with the chromium.
Right,
he's got that,
but I'm
that
so,
one
I'm talking
combined.
Larger. Doses.
Something larger. You think larger?
Well,
for
cholesterol management, it's usually in the 500 milligrams a day range.
Oh, it is also. Okay.
But it's spread out, and you got to be careful, because people don't like the flushing and
come
to it quickly. So that's.
Yeah, he doesn't like the sweating, so to add flushing to it might not be.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the sweating, then I would be looking at his testosterone, certainly his adrenals, but it could be testosterone imbalance. Definitely, for sure. So an adrenal test would be a good thing to do for him.
Okay. Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it sounds like you're doing a great job. This is great that you've got the opportunity
to
just walk a real person through this.
And I'm glad to see results. I don't want to, build the wrong expectations. And I wanted to know what to add to the mix here, because the only thing I can really think of is to exercise more.
Yeah. Well, I would look at those. I would look at the extra herbs and supplements. I don't know how much he's doing that, the extra foods and supplements and herbs that help with the issue. And just, you may have to just do this trial and error experimentation with it. Lipoic acid is one. That's got some good track records. And vanadium, has he done the vanadial sulfate?
No, that one scared me when, yeah. So
yeah, I wouldn't be scared of just doing it for a month.
Okay.
You can do small doses of it, which is what's in a lot of the multi formulas. You can do that for years. That's been shown to be, but it's that big dose. I think it's 50 milligrams three times a day or something. 25 three times a day. I don't remember the exact dose, but that you do it for a month. But it can really dramatically bring the levels down.
But then will it come back up? That's the whole thing. I mean, I'm trying to help
it's
him
not,
understand
no,
that,
it,
too.
That's not, what's, no, it doesn't seem to. As long as the diet, he's not going to be able to go back to a high glycemic diet and maintain his changes.
But the biggest issue with him is going to be, he does have the gluten sensitivity, so he's been eating the gluten-free food before this, not during this. And I'm actually concerned that that's what got us even in deeper situation here, because I don't really feel good about a lot of those gluten-free bread that they're
Well, he certainly can't do it if he's got a metabolic syndrome going on with his glucose is like this. That stuff's poison to him.
The gluten-free product?
Yeah, all that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and even
breads
and
crackers and
I mean, I kind of feel like the sprouted breads might actually be better for him, but you say no.
No. Sprouted breads are they all have gluten in them.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
so I'm
going
to have to find some kind of a bread product.
Raw onion bread. There's a couple of different brands you can find online at like Raw Food World and places like that that are really great for making sandwiches and things like that. But you see, that's the thing. Like, it's really helping people to retrain, like, what's more important, eating bread or your health?
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? And with this, he's not in a position where he could go back to the bread. Somebody who's thin, who's got their blood glucose is under control, their lipids are all under control, a little bit of bread here and there, gluten-free is not going to hurt, but So it's a lot of it is about, and then the next module we're going into with Before Be Gone, which we did, we touched on, but you'll see how I do it with everybody here, is that really getting in touch with, like, maybe this is a way of life, right? I started doing this 2 years ago quite accidentally when I taught the program, not realizing I had an issue, that I realized I couldn't tolerate fruit. And I've gotten to the point where I'm just used to eating that way now.
Yeah.
I just don't even think, let me try fruit. Okay, I'm only going to eat fruit if I have my blood glucose meter really handy and I can test it every 15 minutes and make sure and see, because I don't want to just do it and think I'm okay and throw myself into that state. So it's really a matter of coming to the point of what's the most important, right? Feeling good or a few seconds of pleasure from the bread on your tongue.
Yeah, and I am trying to convince him that he's just going to have the shake forever, and now we're talking about, instead of having a real shake, can I just do the powder instead? And that seems to be fine. I would think that would be fine also. And it's really just having more variety. That's what he's yearning for now, just have more variety.
But there is a huge amount of variety.
I know, it's all vegetable-based.
Right, but it's a lot of variety.
Yeah, I know.
He could have a little fish if he's not a vegetarian.
No, he's eating fish, and he's eating protein at dinner every night, chicken or fish or all organic. So he's eating a protein in the evening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I always have to laugh when I hear people wanting variety. And literally, when you look at the typical American, right, or the way I grew up, it was every night it was a piece of meat with some canned vegetables and potatoes or rice or pasta. There wasn't really a whole lot of variety there, right?
And
you can get the variety with your spices, with playing around with it. I mean, every time, if you watch any of my Oh, you're not in Vital yet. You were asking.
No, I have. That's. I have watched the two free ones. As a matter of fact, later I'll ask the question when everybody's had a chance. Because I watched the recent one that you did on the Omega stuff. Yeah, I watched the one before that. I'm yearning for that coleslaw recipe that you made. The one before that. It looks so good when you were eating it. Yeah.
Well, you'll get it. You'll get it very soon. It's a challenge. I think we may end up just giving it the next time we run the program right at the beginning and just let people continue if they want to continue. I mean, it's cheap to continue. It's no big deal. Mm. But we were just thinking, oh, well, you got all these other calls. You don't need another slew of extra emails
every week telling you
about more calls.
That's a good strategy because people wouldn't have the time for it anyway. Yeah.
Right. Right, yeah. Exactly. So that was our strategy. Anyway, but yeah, there is so much variety. And did you watch the little slideshow on the page where the...
Yes, I did.
But
I guess it's really the mental thing is if you're coming from a world where vegetables were a certain part of your diet and you're limiting all the other part of your diet, right, then that's probably why he feels that there's no variety, right?
But the majority of us came from there. Those of us who love vegetables now, we came from there. And we decided that we were going to do what it took for our health. And then you suddenly go, wow, I can't imagine eating anything else. I mean, how could you have a meal without like a ton of vegetables? What kind of meal would that be?
Yeah.
And so it's a matter of getting it and finding out, like, what are the flavors he's missing? What are the textures he's missing?
He's mixing chewing. He's told me that.
Well,
he misses chewing.
Well, there's a lot of chewing you can do with
the food. And I like in the morning, I originally had him just doing the shakes because it's too much to do everything. And once I added the chia cereal, he felt better because he had some chewing.
Yeah.
So he misses, I've heard him say, you know, I got to have chewing. Like the soups were a no because there was no chewing.
No chewing.
Yeah, he likes to chew.
Okay. Well, figure out ways you can get him to chew. Look through the recipes yourself and pull out things and say, oh, well, here's a chewy one. Okay, and definitely get him looking at some of those, the crisps and things. I get these packages of raw kind of, they like carbohydrates, but there's no carbohydrates in them. They're just vegetables and nuts and seeds. And they're delicious. And if you go on to Raw Food World or a place like that, they have a ton of variety there. And they have chia crackers, they have nori crackers, they have onion bread. There's all kinds of really amazing. There's one that I love. They're called chia chipotle. They're really delicious. And they're fantastic. Or kale crisps, that kind of thing. Or making, I don't know if he has all the equipment to do that or the desire to do that. If he's a management type that works 40
Yeah, he's not. The making is not going to happen. But Raw Food World is a website or a
brand?
It's
a website, rawfoodworld.com. Okay. And just look up the snacks, and you'll see all these different crackers. And I tell people, just go there with the intent you're going to spend $100. You know, you're just going to, it's like groceries, right? You go out to the store, you spend a minimum $100, you walk into a store. So you decide with the idea that you're going to try out a whole bunch of stuff. Some of it you're going to love. Some of it you're going to feel neutral about. Some of it you might be giving to the neighbors. But you find out that way what you like. And I found several just amazing things that I love to munch on.
Okay.
And it gives you that chewy, crunchy, carbohydrate type of feel.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have more questions, but I'll raise my hand again and give somebody else a chance to ask.
Okay.
Okay. Thank
Sounds
you.
Good. Your questions are good. They're always good. They always really educate everybody, and we get to talk about good stuff. So thank you. Great. I'm going to look. Anybody else who has a question, raise your hand, *2. And I'm going to go to the Q&A where it's been typed to see who else might have put in some questions. Yes, we do. Tracy. Hi, Tracy. Says, I was wondering if you had any information on the certification program. Come up with what you would call people who go through the function. So you're talking, Tracy, are you talking about my year-long or 18-month? We're working on that right now. We're working on that. We're playing around with some titles right now. Functional is definitely in the mix. Endocrinology is a biggie because I feel like everything is based in the hormones. And I'm going to be doing a webinar next week. It hasn't been announced yet because we're still working on the content. But I'm going to be doing a webinar for practitioners next week to kind of explore that. And then we're going to be doing a program in January, and I'll be talking more about that at that point as well. But we're looking at things like, you know, functional nutritionist, functional endocrinology. Well, how did I call it? Functional endocrinology nutritionist, endocrinology, various things with those different words. Nutritionist, functional endocrinology, because I really, what my program focuses on a lot is the hormones as the basis of all health, whether it's digestion or lungs or cardiovascular. We're seeing here, like these hormones, like cortisol and insulin and all, deeply affect cardiovascular health. There's effects on the skin. There's effects on digestion, if you look at the endocrinology of digestion. So those are all the things. And as far as the program, it's not going to be announced, offered, laid out until January. So, and probably starting in March or April. So anyway, if that's what you're asking about, that's, and I don't want to reveal anything more. I'm really not very good at keeping secrets. So I do want to make sure I have all of it laid out. Let's see, refresh. Okay. Nobody else has questions typed in. Nobody else has their hands raised. So, Eleanor, fair game. She popped right up as soon as I said nobody else has their hands raised. There it went. All right.
Are you talking to Eleanor?
I'm talking to Eleanor, yeah.
Okay.
You're the only one.
Okay. So I have another client. She's going through the Before Be Gone program with you. And this is really
name?
About...
Well, I recognize
her name is Loretta. She asked the question about the red peppers. And she's been my client before, and I've always told her that you need to eat a protein with every meal. And I've told her to eat the protein first. And the main reason why is because it was my understanding that that would slow down the glucose, you know, entering her blood system and keep her blood nice and steady. So I kind of got confused a little bit. She was asking about the red pepper and the nuts and everything, because I was looking back at the insulin and protein timing, which was page 22 of round 4, and it was talking about, and I thought you had a discussion at one point about sometimes the protein can actually make it appear that the glucose is steady, but actually spike the insulin. You did say that. Okay, I'm not crazy. Okay.
Yeah. It's not a good idea to have high carbohydrate protein, high glycemic carbohydrates with protein.
So it's high glycemic. So should they have a protein with every meal?
Well, there's protein in everything. So I think that by eating a lot of greens, you're getting protein. By adding nuts and seeds, you're getting protein. By adding things like beans and quinoa, you're getting protein. So, you know, and meat, protein powders, those are all different kinds of proteins.
Okay.
So there's protein in everything except fruit, pretty much, and junk food.
Yeah, and that's what I, you know, for her, she was looking at the meals because she's making the cooked meals from your recipe guide, and she's saying, see, where are the proteins in this? There's no protein in this meal. And I think now you're just saying it to me, the plants have proteins in it. But, you know, I always told my clients to eat a protein as well.
Well, what kind of protein are you telling them to eat?
Well, I told her that I told her she could either make some chicken on the side, she could throw some nuts in. I told her the only, you know, quinoa she could try, but she'd have to test, but we weren't really eating beans, right? Because beans would be another one that I would.
Well, beans you have to test. Some people do really well with legumes.
Okay.
Some people don't.
Yeah, because she's you know, eating and trying to feed a daughter who's a vegetarian as well. And So she's struggling because she can't. She wants to make these cooked meals at night, and she can't figure out how to add the protein unless she just has her daughter.
Well, the protein is there. Every one of those meals has an abundance of protein because there's always some sort of nut, seed, you know, coconut type of thing in that meal.
Oh, coconut is also. I didn't think of coconut
protein.
As a protein.
I mean, there's not a lot of protein in it, but the amount of vegetables that we're using supplies a lot of protein. So if you eat the meals the way they're laid out, but I always say, if you look every page of the thing, somebody got mad at me who was a vegetarian and said, you're telling me to eat meat with every meal. And I says, look it, it says optional. You know, have 3 ounces of meat or whatever. So she can always add that to it.
Right.
So if she's making something for her daughter, she can make, say, a stir fry or a steamed vegetable thing with a salad, and she could chop up some meat if she's eating it for herself. So it makes it easy and flexible. I found, you know, I was really frustrated because all the insulin resistance programs, number one, they had still had a lot of grain in them. And I'm like, you're not telling people to test. But also, they're all meat-based. There's a lot of animal products at every meal. And it's a lot harder to take a menu plan that's all animal products and turn it into something vegetarian than to, it's very easy to take a vegetarian menu plan and make it omnivorous. Yeah, you chop up 3 ounces of meat, you add it to it. And that way, most people, if you are going to eat meat, that's great, but eat, you get to eat an abundance of the veggies. So that's why that the menu was born that way. So there is protein built into it. And I say, and I think it was in one of the slides or one of the documents, it said, so this is how you lay out your meals. You're still getting a lot of greens, you're getting your omega-3 fats, you're getting that balance, lots of fiber from the vegetables, and you need something for protein. So the protein could be a handful of hemp seeds, you know, on your salad. It could be a dressing made with the hemp seeds. All the dressings have protein built into them. So it could be a dressing. It could be a nut seed pate that we've given you recipes for, the not refried bean recipe and the tuna, fake tuna pate.
Right,
and
right.
There's the nut cheeses, all of those things have a lot of protein when you add it up. Broccoli has a lot of protein. Kale has a lot of protein. But hemp seeds are super phenomenal source of protein.
Okay. That's you know, it was the stir-fry dishes. She was just trying to, and I
oh, those are easy,
just,
right? She just it makes it for her daughter, throws in the meat, and makes it for herself. Or pre-cooks the meat, maybe throw it in the oven so that it's cooked,
right,
and then she chops it up and throws it into the stir-fry.
To hers, yeah, just to hers. And then for the daughter, you know, she would normally have beans or something, or dairy. I mean, the daughter gets her protein from dairy and beans, and so that's where she's getting. But I was confused on the protein thing because it does seem like these meals should be protein, have enough protein in them. And then it says that, you know, this whole slide is about insulin and protein timing, and it says that insulin increases protein synthesis. So is this basically saying that insulin is actually making protein and it's robbing the sources for protein from your muscles to make the protein if you don't have protein in your meal or in your blood system somehow?
It can, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why I never knew that aspect of why does insulin increase protein synthesis? I guess that's a whole new concept to me. I wasn't quite sure what that was all about.
Insulin is a catabolic hormone, meaning it stores. It doesn't burn. It creates.
Okay.
So it creates fat. Right? It takes the glucose out, creates fat. It could create protein given the right mix. So I think the slide, I can't remember exactly what slide you're talking about, but if I recall, the one you're talking about is that morning, the reason for it being so important in the morning is that your cortisol levels naturally go high in the morning just to wake you up and get you up for the day. Well, cortisol has the effect of breaking down muscle.
Yeah, because it likes protein for its source.
Because it wants to turn it into glucose. So if you've got that cortisol being high and you don't have protein in the meal, then it's going to go and trigger the breakdown of those protein stores.
Okay. That one I understood pretty clearly. Yeah. And then I was trying to, you know, tell her about the timing, because I had always told her to eat protein, and now I understand it's the high glycemic foods are, you really should be careful combining them with protein.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But high fiber, like the vegetables, you know, that's the whole point. When you combine a meal, people say, hey, you have to have a carbohydrate, a fat, and a protein in each meal. Well, the protein and the fat and the carbohydrate, really the importance is the fiber, high antioxidant rich, not ones that contain a lot of glucose, you know, easy source of glucose.
Okay.
So that's why a meal that's really balanced would have some source of protein, and that protein can be hemp seeds. And it would have some sort of fat. Well, that fat can be hemp seeds because they're balanced between protein and fat. And then the carb would be the vegetables.
Okay, okay. And then another question, just since nobody's raising their hands, what is the difference between carob and dark chocolate and cocoa powder, C-A-C-A-O powder?
Okay.
Are they all the same? Or
No. They're all very different, very different. And this we'll move on to another, because I see another couple of hands coming up.
Okay,
so,
good.
That's a good question. So carob comes from a tree called the carob tree, and it comes in pods. Carob has no caffeine. Carob is very alkalizing to the body. Carob has a high level of calcium in it. Carob has a thing called pinitol, which helps to move the glucose out of the bloodstream and into the cells, so it supports insulin and increases insulin sensitivity of the cells. Chocolate, actually raw chocolate, the way it grows on the trees, is cacao. When they roast it and make it into bars and make it into powder, it's called cocoa. So cacao is the raw version of cocoa. It's the real thing coming off the tree. And once they process it and they roast it, then it becomes cocoa. Chocolate is high in magnesium. So carob and chocolate actually work well together. I like to make recipes that are half and half because you get that blend of calcium magnesium. It's a little more acidic form, acid forming, but, and it also has caffeine in it.
What does? I missed what
chocolate.
You said.
Chocolate.
Yeah. So a lot of the things I'm hearing is that they're really recommending dark chocolate for people in these situations. Is that, can people
Who's
eat
they?
Dark chocolate?
Who's they are recommending?
A lot, of, like I hear other health people that are, J.J. Virgin, one name that came to mind, that they're really saying these are the things that will help you get your sugar under control, the dark chocolate and stuff like that.
It's marginal. I mean, it's mixed feelings. Yeah, it has some good, it has some blood sugar balancing, but not as good as other things, but it just, people like it. But you see, when people say get dark chocolate, they're going and they're buying a bar that says 80% chocolate or whatever, but there's always sweeteners in those.
Yeah, I guess that's
okay?
the point.
So,
okay.
So if you want, you get raw cacao. I get these little bark, these pieces of raw cacao. It's 100% because that's all that's in it.
Okay.
Okay? Or I get the powder, and then I mix it with almond butter or coconut butter, and that's what some of the recipes are in there. So I would get the cacao powder, get what's called cacao paste, which is the chunks of it that you can melt down or you could eat as is. I'll take one of those paste chunks, and I'll put on some coconut butter and a couple of drops of stevia and eat it. Like a little Snickers bar or something. So, yeah, I mean, chocolate's been glorified as this, like, superfood, super healthy. And it has some really good properties, a lot of antioxidants and all this. But it has a couple of – everything's two-edged. It has some downsides, too. So it's not something you want to overdo, especially if you have adrenal issues because of the caffeine. So, yes, it can be helpful. And
the raw cacao is good for the adrenals because that's why I'm doing the adrenal elixir, and that's good for the adrenals, right?
Yeah, it's marginal for the adrenals. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
I'm
not
doing
like
your
good
adrenal
for the adrenals.
Elixir. The hair. It's the hair thing I'm doing. I thought it was adrenal also. I'm sorry. It's the hair growing thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but the chocolate, you know, the chocolate I put in there not because the chocolate is contributing necessarily to the support of it, but because it makes it taste good and people are going to drink it.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Now, you could take out the chocolate and put in carob, which I say in there. You could be chocolate or carob.
Okay.
And just put the chocolate flavor. So the jury's out on the chocolate. I mean, I eat it. It's good. I like it. But it can be addicting.
Okay.
And it has some very good properties, but it's not something to be eating all day long or promoting people to eat all day long. And going and getting an 80% chocolate bar wouldn't do because they usually have sugars. Now, there are a few. If you seek them out, they're really hard to find, but every now and then I'll find one at Whole Foods, a bar it's not raw chocolate. It's the cooked, you know, whatever, the roasted chocolate, but it's sweetened with stevia. Or erythritol or something like that. There are some raw chocolate bars. Sacred Chocolate makes these beautiful little hearts that are raw cacao, and they're sweetened with erythritol. So they're low glycemic, diabetic friendly, they'll say on them. But
okay.
They're a little on the expensive side. Or you can watch my videos and make some. I made a couple of good ones on that last show.
Yeah.
And all of them, I usually make some of that to show people how easy that is to make your own. So if you're going to do it, just get the raw cacao and include it into things and use some of the recipes that we have in the book.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Okay, so Martha. Hi, howdy, Martha.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Good, how are you?
Well, thank you.
Good.
I was just wondering if you could speak a little bit to kind of the terminology that you use. I know you don't say that your program cures insulin resistance or diabetes. I don't think you use the word cures, although I know
no.
Gabriel Cousins, he uses the word cure in terms of but you also seem to say more than that, it just manages it. And so I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit to that terminology and, like, specifically, it seems to me when you talk about your situation, you've been doing this for 2 years, and I don't know how much you've been able to broaden what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I think you said that when you started this program, you found that you couldn't eat blueberries, and can you eat them now, or you only eat them?
Yeah. No, I can eat blueberries now, and I can eat a lot more than I used to. But the big issue with me is that I just haven't gotten the sleep thing together. I go on 2 or 3 hours of sleep very often, and until I make that commitment to do that, it's not gonna fix. My fasting blood sugar has been in the 70s. It's very well controlled, and I figured out I can eat these these little breads that my friend Karen makes. They're made with flax and chia, but she sweetens them with raisins and dates. Like, they're not like super sweet, like dessert sweet, but they're like a sweet bread, and I can eat those, and my sugar only goes up to 95. So yeah, it's broadened a lot, and I just don't take the time to test too often, because it's like it doesn't really bother me that I don't have a broad range of stuff that I don't eat those things. I would love to have pineapple, and the last time I tested it was a year ago. So most of these things I haven't just really taken the time to test, but it's definitely gotten better. And I see when people are really dedicated and do all the pieces. The other piece I don't do for myself on the regular basis as I should, and this, you know, I'll just admit it, is I'm really bad about taking supplements. So I don't think I've ever done a straight month of taking Micromium. I've been trying these last 2 days because we're on the fourth day. I've taken it twice out of the four because if I forget. So it does. I see tremendous reversals. But the thing is, people can't then go back to their old ways. They have to find what works for them. So if they're on a really high, just unlimited number of fruit before, then they may not go back to that, but they will be able to broaden. And that's what the whole reset, like the after the 30 days is up, what I call the stepping into the future part, is, okay, where are you at now? Is your weight where you want it to be? Do you still have more weight to lose? Is your energy where you want it to be? Okay, do you want to start to broaden? Here's how you do it. Start with these things and then gradually increase it. When you get to the point where you've increased the foods up to what you figured out what you can do, can you lower the supplements down? Sure, and this is how you do it. And I explained to how to do that. And there's actually a new document I put together for IRSPT this time around that has that in there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but
yes, it does. It's not like it's – and Gabriel Cousins will – you know, he'll say it's a cure for diabetes. Yes, but it doesn't mean you can go back to your old ways. So if a cure means I get fixed, and then I can keep doing what I was doing that caused it to happen in the first place and it not happen again, then no, there is no cure.
Okay, so but you're comfortable with the terminology cure, or?
No, I never use the word cure. Nah, I don't like that term.
So how would you say that?
How do I say it? I say it's a program to reverse insulin resistance.
Reverse. Okay.
You know, to reset the insulin sensitivity. And it does. It does. In 30 mm-hmm. days, you can totally reset your insulin sensitivity. Now, if you go back to the heavy-duty, high-glycemic stuff, you're going to resensitize them. And remember I talked about how there's certain people at the far end of the spectrum, like the George Burns end of the spectrum. No matter what they do, they're probably not going to get the insulin resistance. And then there's people at the other end, it's like, just look at a piece of pineapple and you're going to get sensitized. And then there's people in between who can go either way depending on how carefully they take care of themselves. And I think mm-hmm. when we're talking to people about this, that's where we have to be really clear. This is not like go through this magic bullet program like they're used to with medicine. Just take this and then you'll be cured. Like people with cancer, right? Go on this chemotherapy and then you'll be fine. And then, you know, in 5 years they're dead. But mm-hmm. the thing worked because it kept them alive for 5 years, right? But they went back to the same old that caused it in the first place. Or how the repeat incidence of heart attacks, right? People say, oh, we're cured. And then they drop dead 3 years later because they went back to their old ways. So it's the same thing here. Only we're saying you don't go back to your old ways, right? Here's the foods nobody should ever eat. And I'm sure there's foods on there that some of your patients are saying, oh, yeah, but I've been eating that for my whole life. Well, yeah, you're not going to go back and eat hydrogenated fats and sugar and refined carbs and gluten and expect to maintain your benefits. But you might be able to go back and eat pineapple and blueberries and grapes and whatever, rice. Mm-hmm. My husband's a good sign of it. He has been able to, when we first started testing him, he sat down to a bowl of fruit and wasn't even that high glycemic of stuff, and his blood sugar went up to 180. And his fasting blood sugars were always 95. And he has gotten to the point where his fasting blood sugars are now in the high 70s, and his blood sugar hardly ever goes up. And he's not as careful as me. He cheats. He'll not cheats bad. Like, he doesn't go out and eat, you know, chocolate chip cookies or anything. But he'll have rice or he'll have some corn chips or something like that occasionally and a little bit, and it doesn't shoot up his sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So you could see that there's been a huge change in his insulin sensitivity.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. So, Casey. Hi, Casey.
Hello, Rita Marie. Hi.
Hello.
So I have a couple of interesting things to share with you. One is that on Sunday, which was day three, I went to a very well-known raw food restaurant in Orange County. It's probably mm-hmm. one of the penultimate raw food restaurants in the country. And my husband and I shared a meal. We shared a raw food salad, and I always make them take the dressing off because I never know what's in anything, and I prefer things without. I prefer to eat the things anyway, just enjoy the taste of the nutrients without coating it with something else. But and then we got this other dish that is a soaked and sprouted greens dish that is intended to taste like wild rice, but it's not wild rice, and it's not rice at all. It's not a grain. It's a grass. Mm-hmm. And I also don't use it with the macadamia cream dressing, and I don't I eat it very plain.
Yes.
And both of us, when we tested our glucose 15 minutes after, our had shot way up.
Hmm.
And in this, also in this faux fried rice, it's raw, okay, so in this faux dish, the there was some kind of a light sauce on it, like a clear liquid sauce, and it also had, it had niblets of corn, and I meticulously picked out every single one. Now, Steve, my husband, ate the corn. He didn't pick it out, but both of our blood sugars responded high, and we decided that it was whatever liquid sauce was on this entree. Must have had some kind of sweetener. It may have been date paste or date liquid or something.
Yeah, or it might have been coconut syrup or something they typically use in rough restaurants.
But it was very interesting that even at a raw vegan restaurant, you still have to be mindful of what's in the things. Now, I knew it wasn't the salad because even though Steve ate the dressing, I didn't.
That's a good point, because that's the thing I find is that I have to really watch out for gluten at raw foods restaurants in addition to the sweetener. So there's two things. It's the sweeteners and the gluten, because they use Nama Shoyu, because it's a quote-unquote raw soy sauce.
Some use Mari instead.
Exactly. Some of them don't use it, but you have
and
to really
use
ask.
Some coconut aminos. You do have to ask.
You have to ask.
The other thing that I want to share with you is that we made a version of your chocolate candies that were fantastic, and we did not go with the carob powder, the raw vegan carob powder. Organic. Instead, we went with raw organic cacao powder. And the reason that we chose that is because on the label, and I just have the Sun Foods Superfoods chocolate cacao nibs that are organic, on the nutrition facts, 0 grams of sugar, zero, and four grams of protein. And on the Love Raw Foods brand of raw organic carob powder, there are 3 grams of protein and 28 grams of sugar in a 2-ounce serving.
What?
Yes. So carob is actually quite high in sugar. So, and this is the sole ingredient is premium organic raw carob powder. There's nothing else. It's it. And so, I have found that using carob is not as viable for me as a substitute when I'm trying to moderate sugars. And I look at ingredients a lot because I had a sugar addiction and a pretty healthy one. So I just wanted to alert you that cacao has no sugar and carob has.
And carob does taste sweeter, but it never, I didn't even look at the carob because most stuff doesn't even come with, comes in bulk and it doesn't come with, and it's got the, and I've never had a problem with it, but I'll test it more carefully. Interesting. And it may be just that because it has that chemical called pinetol, which helps to get the sugar across the cells, that may counteract it.
I don't know, and we could try it and stuff and test it, but that's just been a very
interesting
element. The other thing is that for me today, first of all, I have found that managing everything according to the schedule of the timing is that doing this program is a full-time job. And now you know that I have clients and I'm a practitioner, so that I'm taking this on in a different capacity. Relearn things. So I, like you, have never been particularly consistent with taking supplements. I, like you, have a lot of natural energy and a great degree of willpower and dedication, and even I lose focus and I, just am so interested in what I'm doing that I forget the time. So I also am not consistent with the amount of sleep that I'm getting. So with that being said, I will tell you that I have not had time to have more than 2 meals a day, because by the time I get myself in order, I'm usually drinking my protein shake around 11 or so, or even later sometimes. And the evening meal, usually around 5 or 6 in the afternoon, because I have I don't have low hypoglycemia, so I don't get lightheaded or cranky or anything.
Right.
If I don't eat, I don't eat. I'm busy.
Yeah.
I don't think about it. And when I'm hungry, I'm hungry.
But
today, my resting blood sugar was 74.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had my protein shake. And I am also testing a significant number of these supplements. If you looked at my kitchen counter, and my husband's doing this with me because he is he and I coach together, and we have 20 supplements on the counter. I mean, we have the magnesium, we have the Nopal, we have the Balance B Complex, digestion enhancement enzymes from Health Forge Nutritionals, vanadyl sulfate, ALA, ashwagandha, CoQ10, vitamin B6, vitamin C, zinc, pantothenic acid.
Got them all.
I got them all.
Okay.
So the chromium picolinate, the algae omega, ELA, and EPA and DHA. I have the V and D3, the B12, niacin, selenium, valerian, and I also am using instead of taking the selenium, I'm using the Brazil nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, my blood sugar today. Resting blood sugar before eating, fasting blood sugar 74. An hour later after the taking the Calm with 3 of the Nopal and 1 of the B complex, it went to 79.
Mm-hmm.
Then I drank the gut rejuvenator. Then I ate my meal, and 30 minutes after my meal, my glucose was at 83. An hour after, an hour after that, it was at 80.
Well,
and then I, around, let me think, 2 hours, a little over 2 hours later, it was at 91 without having eaten anything. And then another hour and 45 minutes after that, it was at 94.
Hmm.
Now, I had nothing, no food in between, not particularly stressful time. You know, nothing that was causing me undue stress. I am tired. The sleep thing, I think, is still a challenge. But it's so interesting, and I'm wondering what I could do is when I notice this is I could do a burst. Because I'm guessing that what's happening is something is releasing glucose into my bloodstream to give me enough energy to get through the day. Is that your best guess?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. You're eating two meals. You're forgetting about eating. And you're having to go to stores. You're having to go to your storage of glycogen in the liver to release. Or if it's a stressful, like, emergency situation, your blood sugar is threatening to be too low, then there would be a cortisol release. So I would say that it's probably, first of all, in the 90s is just fine. So don't worry about it. That's fine during the day to have. But it was probably that your blood sugar just started to drop because you hadn't eaten, and your whole glucagon, insulin thing that just, you know, kind of plays this little game all day long when you're not eating came into play.
So I would like to share with you that we think that the your hummus is delicious. The refried bean pate is amazing. We made the stuffed jalapenos. They're excellent. My husband has an extraordinary hand that he makes a lot of raw vegan things in the dehydrator that are fantastic. I'm consuming a lot more fat than I normally do, obviously putting the chia seeds and some soaked flax seeds and maybe a tablespoon of the coconut butter to help better absorb the chia and balance the absorption of the omega-3s, and things like that are giving me higher fat content, which is higher satiation. So I'm not hungry. This is not I'm depriving myself of feeling hungry and I'm waiting, you know. But the other thing that I wanted to share is that in listening to one of the callers earlier on this evening is the concept of protein and the myth under which we have been brought up that we have to have protein at every meal and the fact that there isn't protein in vegetables. And kale is a wonderful source.
Oh, it's a great source
of protein.
Yeah.
And it has to do not just with the grams of protein that you would see on a label, but with how assimilatable,
right,
how easily the body can absorb the nutrients in that protein is what's important. And so a lot of times reconditioning and re-educating your client as far as what protein is, I personally don't recommend animal protein as a source of protein because it's acidic.
Mm-hmm.
And it can, you know, cause its own share of problems, no matter
Absolutely.
How, quote-unquote, clean or organic
Absolutely.
The meat is. And, of course, I know that you have dairy on the top six allergens, but dairy also is a terrible source of protein, even worse
awesome.
Than
yeah.
meat.
I would,
so,
yeah, if I had to eat one or the other, I've been vegan for 28 years. If I had to eat one or the other at gunpoint, I would choose the meat over the dairy because
of course.
I think dairy's way worse. And I don't recommend meat. It's just it's an option for people, and not everybody is willing to or able to go vegan. I've been vegan for 28 years. It works for me. I see it a lot, and a lot of people are psychologically unable to give it up. Some people, their sugars are so messed up, and they just can't do what you or I do, which is go forever without eating. And the meat tends to hold them longer so that they can, and it helps them to get off the carbs, which is worse then. So, you know, I would say if I had a choice between eating gluten and eating meat, I would go with the meat, even though I've been vegan for 28 years because of the, you know, you get a clean piece of meat versus you get gluten and wreaking havoc in your system. You know, so it's really, sometimes it's a matter of like picking your poisons almost.
Yes, of course. And, you know, we live in an environment where we have water pollution and air pollution
right.
and all, you know, all kinds of other
right.
Right.
And some people, I've seen it in my practice. I've seen it as much as I've seen people who say, I just want to be vegetarian. I want to be vegan so bad. And as soon as I eat this piece of, this, you know, 2-ounce piece of meat, my color comes back. Everything gets better. So
there are
something going on there. There's something
mm-hmm.
biochemically going on there. So I'm not, you know, dogmatic about people should be eating meat or shouldn't be eating meat. It's like, I think either way, you can create a very healthy diet.
Absolutely. And I will also add, though, that this whole protein myth goes yeah. to support the meat and dairy industry
oh, yeah.
revenue stream, and that you never heard of anybody having problems from not getting enough protein. And yet our bodies struggle to deal with too much protein. We have all kinds of kidney problems that can't assimilate too much protein. And so when someone tells me that where are they getting the protein and will they be getting enough protein, particularly with juicing, because our program, we do a 10-day juice reboot, you know, where you're
right.
just juicing only with green juices.
That's a tremendous amount of protein. How much protein goes to make a day's worth of juice? It's like 10 or 15 pounds.
It's fantastic, and it's assimilatable so easily, and it goes right into the bloodstream, and the digestive system doesn't have to kick in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty extraordinary, but I think that raising people's awareness about protein and that everything contains protein, carbohydrate, and fat, and not to overdo the nuts and seeds because they are also high fat content,
right.
and fat's important for the assimilation of the B vitamins and for brain function and prevention of Alzheimer's and many other things. But too much fat, just as too much protein
right.
and too much carbs, can cause challenges. So
right.
I think
exactly.
it's, you know, that would be, you know, just the one feedback that I would share with her that in my practice has supported me in re-educating people about.
Well, I think
protein.
The biggest thing is that people aren't used to eating the volume of vegetables that we're recommending here. And I think that volume of vegetables for most people, and I can't say it across the board because I've found people who have oxalate sensitivities and other things, but that quantity of vegetables is largely needed, and it's what's missing, and it supplies the plethora of those nutrients that they're not getting otherwise. And when, like for me, people say, well, how do you eat that if you don't eat any carbs? You must be eating a lot of fat. No, I'm eating a lot of vegetables. I'm eating a lot
right.
of, yeah, I eat a fair amount of fat with my vegetables, but I'm not like going around eating handfuls of nuts all day.
Right. Well, I will tell you that today I was I had a long conversation with a woman who has digestive difficulties, IBS, and we were talking about her, you know, commitment to whether or not she really wants change and if she's willing to make, you know, make changes right. to have different results. And she happened to, you know, ask me about protein. I told her that kale is wonderful, and she says, I don't know what kale is. I've never seen it. I've never heard of it. And I know that as part of our program, because it's a telecourse and people are calling in from all over, but for people who are local, we take a tour of the grocery store, produce department, and we show people, here, you can juice this, you can juice collard greens, but don't juice bananas because there's no juice that comes out of bananas. Or don't juice an eggplant, but you can juice a, you know, you can juice, you know, different things. There's many examples, but it's very, very interesting that people associate vegetables with bad carbs, and that's another re-education point that I think is so, and also the cooking of vegetables, just like the cooking of meat or cooking of anything, destroys nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep,
you know.
There's a balance, and we come to the balance of some things. When you break down the fibers, they do release more of the nutrients, where it's hard to get the nutrients out. So you can just look at, well, there's the cooking versus the uncooking, but the fact of the matter is people in Canada, when they start to get cold, it's really hard to get them to just drink cold juice and drink cold smoothies and eat raw vegetables. So there's a balance there, right? And I think that there's a lot of dogma in what I call the food religions, and that's one of the things that I am going to have a whole module on in my next certification program, is really understanding the food religions and figuring out how to really work with what's the right balance for each person that you're working with. Because, you know, I look at the different kinds of food religions, and some of them are just downright dangerous.
Right? And we've been indoctrinated from a young age into most of those religions. Where food is love and love is food, and or if you find a guru and you're following them, that person may well be able to do something, but it may be very harmful, even deadly, to someone else. Yeah, it's a very interesting dilemma.
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There are other people who
thank
want to share, but I thought
sharing.
I was just, yeah, I thought the restaurant story was particularly
very interesting. And what it really comes down to is asking. Everything, you know, even when you think you're in a safe place, asking what's in that. Because the last time I had a gluten, well, the second to the last time I had a gluten exposure accidentally, was in a vegetarian restaurant that had a tahini dressing on a salad. And I didn't even think to ask what was in the tahini dressing, because what does anybody ever put in tahini dressing? Tahini?
Did it have nama shoyu in it?
It had soy sauce that had gluten in it. And I got so sick from it. It was really horrible.
Oh, yeah. And even from a small amount, we'll do that. And that's really so, so, so disappointing. You know? So
and I've worked with clients like that where they'll be on this gluten-free diet, and then they'll call up and they'll say, but I just, all I did was, I got the cucumber salad at this restaurant. I was so clean. I just got the vegetables and the cucumber salad. And so we'll say, well, let's call the restaurant. Ooh, what do you put in your cucumber salad? And find out that they had soy sauce in a cucumber salad. Who'd have thought you're going to put soy sauce in a cucumber salad?
Well, when my blood sugar, I mean, my blood sugar in this time that I've been testing it and everything where I monitor, I mean, right after that meal, I measured it. It was 113. And then 30 minutes after the meal, it was 121.
Wow.
And then 45 minutes, it was back at 103 and 92 after that. You know, I mean, it went back down.
Because it was a small exposure. But,
right.
Yeah.
And I minimized, but Steve's went to 138, and he did have the corn and the, you know, and he didn't, he ate the salad dressing. But still, it's just very interesting.
Yeah.
You got to
ask, because
they come
sugar
out with
is
the
added
recipe.
To everything. Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you very much.
All right, you're so welcome. You're so welcome. Let's see. Anybody else have questions? Let's see. I'm going to see if anybody else typed in any questions. So Tracy asked, hi, Dr. Edelman, I wanted to your opinion on dairy in the diet, even if it's organic. I feel it's mucus forming, and I'm not sure when it comes to hormonal health if I should recommend it. I am anti-dairy. You might have heard me in my discussion there with Casey. I think dairy and gluten and sugar are the three top worst, you know, hydrogenated fats. Okay, I could keep going on. But I really, I don't think dairy is good for anybody. And whether it's raw, I've done extensive studies on it. I have a blog post from a couple of years ago where I just went and I just went, okay, what if it's raw? What if it's fermented? What if it's this? What if it's that? And it all comes down to there's so much in dairy that is not good for us. Yes, it's mucus forming. Yes, it's acid forming. The lactose is broken down to a single monosaccharide called galactose. Galactose has been implicated in uterine cancers. Okay, it cross-reacts with gluten. So if anybody's gluten sensitive, it will cross-react. The body will perceive that, even if they don't have a sensitivity to dairy, the body can perceive that the dairy protein as gluten and attack it as if it's gluten. Those gluten antibodies will go gobbling it up. So there's a lot of reasons to stay away from dairy. And, type 1 diabetes and any kind of issues with pancreatic enzyme, islet cells or insulin antibodies associated with dairy. Casein is like glue. Casein is not a good protein for people. It gums up the intestines. It creates problems with absorption. So, yeah, I'm anti-dairy. Jem says, I get cocoa nibs unfermented and can make powder with it as well. That's kind of interesting. Is that the little nibs that have the coating on them, or they're cut down? Because I've tried using those nibs, and they even got my Vitamix jammed up. I couldn't blend them down. I'd be curious to see where you're getting those. Eleanor wants to know another place to buy cordyceps besides Mountain Roses are out until end of November. There's a place called, a couple of places, Z Natural Foods, I think, has them. Z, the letter Z, the last letter of the alphabet. Z, as you Canadians will call it. Z Natural Foods, and then Longevity Warehouse probably has it. Who else might have it? I don't think Frontier has it. I just do a Google search on cordyceps and see who comes up as far as that. That's a bummer that Mountain Rose is out for a while. Where did I get it? Oh, Pine. It's a place that sells pine pollen extract, raw forest foods, R-A-W, forest foods. And you can also try that raw food world that I mentioned. Sorry, a sneeze came on. Didn't want to hurt your ears with it. Raw food world, I think, might have cordyceps as well. So there's a number of good places where you could get cordyceps. No more questions typed in. No more hands up. Last chance for hands and last chance for questions, guys. Okay, we've got Eleanor and then Beverly. All right.
Okay. Just two quick questions.
Mm-hmm.
One of them might be off topic, so you can tell me. The January program, when are you going to publish that? Because I'm getting a lot of requests for commitments in January. And
January 10th to 12th, and it will definitely be going out this week. I have to update the letter. I have a letter, and I have to update it, and I'll get it out. We're just trying to get all the pieces together. But it's January 10th to 12th in Austin, Texas.
Okay, and the letter is going out this week that will tell us what it's all about.
Yep.
Okay, great. This is the one that's off topic. I did my bone density and I got my results, and I'm really looking to try to. I know when I go see the gynecologist, she's going to want to try to put me on a Vista or something. I'm trying to get some natural ideas. Is that too off topic, or can we talk about that quick? What you
We could talk about it quickly, and I'll give you a resource for it. Actually, once you get your Vital community open, there's a no. Actually, not that's not in Vital. Never mind. It's available on my website. Can you turn your speaker off? I think it's happening again.
Oh, it's my headset.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
Yeah,
okay.
I have a site, a bunch of recipe videos that we made if you go to rawfooduniversity.com.
Okay.
And look for Eating for Bone Health. by that video. It's a video. It's an hour of me teaching all the principles behind natural healing, natural bone, and how it works and all that. And then there's another hour and a half or 2 hours, 2 hours or more, maybe 2.5 hours of us actually making recipes. And then there's a recipe guide with all these great foods that incorporate things that you can use to turn around, and stories. I've worked with lots of people where we've help them to turn around their osteoporosis.
Okay, so that's Raw Food University.
RawFoodUniversity.com, and then you'll look at the list of classes, and one's called Eating for Bone Health.
Eating for Bone Health, okay. And yeah. We'll talk about what herbs you recommend, or like...
Herbs and supplements and foods and recipes.
Talk about,
and,
okay.
Yep,
okay.
And more testing. You can do the NTX test to follow up.
Okay, and do you believe in diatomaceous earth?
Diatomaceous earth can be helpful. I know it's useful with parasites, and I know that it has a lot of silica in it, and silica is really important for bone. I also like horsetail. Horsetail is pretty incredible. Nettles. There's a supplement from Herbalist and Alchemist. If you want to take a pill, it's called Osteo Herb, but you can also put it together yourself. Alfalfa, nettles, horsetail, other green stuff, but those are the main ingredients in it.
Okay, good. And do you recommend a brand for any of these, or just?
I usually go to Mountain Rose.
Yeah, okay.
I get them from Mountain Rose.
Okay.
I get it in powder, and I just kind of grind them up and pour them into smoothies and drinks and elixirs and whatever else. And if you prefer to take a pill, Osteo Herb from Herbalist and Alchemist is a good one.
Okay.
And
he's
probably going to be speaking at the event. David Winston is an amazing herbalist.
At the January event?
Yeah. Actually, he's already confirmed. So there's a couple of other speakers that I'm trying to get that I haven't quite gotten confirmations yet.
Okay, good.
That's why I've been holding out, and I think I'm just going to have to send it out with topics and not... Not the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay. It's good because I'm asking to commit to things, and I don't want to commit and then miss out this. So yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That was it for me. Thank you.
All right. You are welcome. And Beverly.
Hi there.
Hi.
We've already got the questions off of the website that they were old. Nothing recent.
Oh, nothing recent. Okay.
No, they're all a month old. So October 1st, I'm sure, would have been answered at this point. And a friend of mine who owns a health food store was asking me about really good sources of testosterone. And pine pollen, I think, was one of the ones that they had found natural sources for, of course, balancing, the body and allowing it to normalize our hormone levels is so very important.
And adrenals,
you know.
Super important, right? Adrenal.
Right, adrenals, right. Exactly. Getting everything humming along and happy, watching our blood sugar. But all of that aside, she still wanted to know if I had a source for testosterone.
It's not a source of it has a little bit of plant type testosterone, but it actually helps you stimulate. So the pine pollen extract. And I've had people do it and get really good results with it. You know, increase their libido and, some of the other signs that they were having when they were working out but not putting on muscle, and that changed around, and, the percentage fat versus lean. So I had good results with that pine pollen extract. And that's Raw Forest Foods is one of the companies that make that.
Right. I had seen that. So that was one of the questions I had. At this point, don't have a lot of other questions, except I would like to ask about the pH, the salivary pH, the strips that we have been using to test in the morning, or I have been, I should say. I wonder whether you feel that a 6.4 or 6.5 is acceptable, or would you worry about that? on them?
I think at least a 6.5 first thing in the morning. And then, you know, there's always somebody that's going to blow holes into some everything we're doing. There was a really good speaker, actually, at a recent conference I went to, the Restorative Medicine Conference, and he's a naturopath. He's a, you know, one of the big name naturopaths in terms of within the naturopathic community. He's written a book, The Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine, and also, I'm trying to remember his name, Joe Pizzorno.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He spoke, he did a wonderful talk on acid-base balance and really putting in terms of a plant-strong diet. And people asked him about paleo, and he said, well, you know, if you eat paleo and you don't eat so much meat, but too, you know, paleo could be too acidic forming, but, you know, a modified paleo could be good. And, you know, and he was really, really promoting the plant-strong diet, as a, which is very, you don't hear that a lot at these conferences. There a lot of them are really pushing more like a paleo or a zone or whatever.
Right.
But he was talking about how he doesn't feel like the strips are really measuring it very accurately. So I have a note. He just talks really fast, and he gave tons of stuff, and I have all the slides. So I didn't have a chance to, like, these guys teach their stuff, and they have these slides, and they put the slide up, and then they blah, 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 it's gone, blah, and I'm just trying to get into it and absorb all the facts on it, and then it's gone. So I've got them I downloaded to my iPad, and I haven't had a chance to look back at it to really get that sense of, like, why he felt like that. But it was like, oh, damn, you know, I just, when you think you have some good way of measuring what's going on inside your body, somebody's going to blow holes in it.
Right, yeah. Well, I'm glad that you feel that way. I don't feel so bad, because I'm always like, am I the only one who's feeling like they're just putting this out at the speed of light, and you're like, whoa, you can feel like your face blowing back, you know, like how fast they talk and show their slides,
oh,
and then
well,
boom, next
you know,
slide.
You cannot, nobody can absorb 180 slides in 60 minutes.
Right.
full of studies and references, and I mean, not, I don't mean picture slides. I'm talking like dense slides.
Oh, yes.
And I'm trying to read through it and listen to him at the same time, and the next thing you know, the slide's gone and he's on to something else. So,
of course, you know, being, you know, coming from a medical school background, all of the things that we're, you know, sitting listening to lectures in pharmacology, and they're showing these graphs and charts, and then boom, he's talking and you're trying to take notes, and like, what?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I used to like to record my lectures and listen to them.
That's why I love doing online programs and taking online programs, because everything's recorded. Like if I had lectures recorded of all my medical school training stuff, wow, wouldn't that be cool? But
right?
You didn't. You just had to go back and just like, okay, what did he say? I don't know. Did you catch what he said? Did you?
Yeah,
and then, of course, that's exactly what's on the test. But I really feel like in teaching, what I want to teach is the practical stuff. I want to teach the stuff that's actually clinically relevant, and the heck with all the other. Yeah, you have to know some of the background, but if you ask me questions about, you know, all the little points on the liver and what they all mean and what all the little globules and module, blah, lymph nodes and all that, it doesn't matter. What matters is you have the working knowledge of the anatomy, physiology, and the biochemistry enough that when somebody says to you, you know, I'm having XYZ symptom, and it happens whenever this, that your mind, you have enough of that knowledge that you can go, oh, well, she must be here. You know, she must be, wow, it sounds like she's low in cortisol because blah, blah, blah is happening. Or, oh, well, she's got high this and low that. And so you can make the connections, and then you can solve the cases that most people can't. And that's the thing with this insulin resistance thing. You go medical practitioner, right, and you say, my blood sugar is 119. They'll say, oh, well, you're pre-diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it ends.
Right.
They maybe
have
say,
nice
well,
day.
We can put you on metformin early. We might be able to put you on metformin now, or maybe glucuride or whatever, glyburide or whatever these other things are. But they don't really get how people can work with the biochemistry of the body by manipulating it by, I just basically, it's nutrition. And when I say nutrition, I mean everything that comes from the outside to the inside to nourish you, the thoughts, the movements,
the movement, right.
the sleep, the stress stuff, and the food itself and the herbs and whatever additional supplements. And when you can use all those things to manipulate the internal biochemistry and shift it back to balance, that's when you can develop health. And the more you understand about how this works, the less you'll be fumbling when something doesn't go textbook, because most things don't go textbook.
Well, everybody wants to dissect it down to this little micro movement of this or that, and, oh, well, if it did that, then we have to get a pill developed that'll change this. And
right.
The farther we get off course from the health of that whole functioning organism,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the more out of balance everything becomes, you know, and then
right.
it's just something that I feel very fortunate to have decided is my goal in life, is to, as a practitioner, take this, what I learned gives me the benefit of having, you know, all my old textbooks, basic knowledge of that, and to know where to go when you have a question. Because I think that's the biggest challenge
yep.
right there is, you know, you may not, can you imagine trying to keep all of these lab values and every single cellular function that we were taught and everything upstairs? You'd be like a zombie walking around. You wouldn't
yeah,
be able to.
There's not enough room, but you need the big picture mechanism. So that's why I decided to teach this stuff that I've learned over the last 20 something years, but synthesized down, because I see the struggle. I see how long it took me to get to the point where it was like, really, I could just kind of think it through and the wheels turn and I see biochemical pathways in my brain. But it takes some doing, and what I had to do was unclutter my mind first to get rid of some of the tubercle on the left part of the bicep that, you know, attaches whatever.
right.
I had to just, like, not have to be memorizing that stuff and just be focusing on what's really important and really understanding how each of the nutrients works in the body and how each of the systems works. How does the adrenal work, and how do all the hormones that control the whole system work? And when things are out of balance, how can you restore function by understanding what's functionally going on? And that's why we're here. You know, it's that whole premise of functional medicine, but taken to the next level of really looking at the quality of the food. Not just like giving it lip service, but really looking at the food and how it interacts with the person. And I don't mean just like, oh, somebody has food allergies. I mean like really looking at how much the food interacts with their biochemistry and their energetics. So.
Right. Well, and as we get farther off course, like with more manipulation of our food sources, more processing, as well as the processing of medicine, you know, into molecules to do something very specific, that, you know, we're just getting so far off track and the system is so broken. And what's really ironic is just we think we're going to solve all the problems by moving more and more and more in that direction, when really we've already gone so far that we need to really step back and go back to the basics and go back to the how things were farmed, you know, 100 years ago, and food was raised and animals were cared for, to bring back things into a balance that would be more supportive. When we used to go to bed
when the light went away.
Exactly. Right. And the food wasn't, you know, you didn't go to the supermarket and buy, you know, bottles of soda and packages of cookies and crackers and that. Now what's wrong? Why can't I eat that? You know, what's broken? Well,
right.
Let's fix it. No, you just need to step back. And
right.
That's what's so fascinating, is looking at learning from history. And, you know, famous history teachers will tell us those that are most successful are the ones that learn from history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is just another example of that, in my opinion. So
great.
Thank you for doing what you're doing.
Philosophical discussions, but it really boils down to, we're all here for a reason, and we care about helping people to
Indeed.
Restore their health and to really be vibrant and whole and happy again. And what we're up against is conditioning and patterning of the society of the supermarket mentality, of the mm-hmm. medical, you know, give me a pill for that mentality. And it's a big education, you know, what you're working with your clients and patients. It's education. There's a lot of education about, not just about, well, this food is good for that and this is what you do for your adrenal glands or whatever, but more than that, it's the education about the habits that they've developed and how those habits are not serving them. Like Eleanor's person who really, you know, wants that and misses that
bread.
Yeah. I could live forever without bread if I just know that what I like more, what I'm addicted to more, is just feeling full of energy and all that. When I was eating bread, I certainly wasn't feeling like that. When I've gotten accidental exposures, it's been, you know, it just puts me in my place and stops me in my tracks. And a lot of what we do in working with people is coaching them into really getting in touch with what's most important and helping them to see that those taste bud things are really just addictions, and they're deviating them away from what's most important.
Right. And empowering them too, because the supermarket mentality is stealing their thunder and their power away.
Right.
You know, and so on so many levels. So getting them back and getting them to realize how empowered they are by just stepping back into the basics, you know, and saying, you know what, that bread is not as tasty as having a clear brain and lots of energy to help me be the best manager I could be.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah, I thank you for doing what you do, and you know, I'm glad that I got that message a long time ago. It's just a matter of putting into practice what we know, and sometimes with those of us that are in this field are sometimes the worst patients, as you know, because we're in a big, you know, rush to get everybody else helped, and then we're the last ones to get it.
Yeah, it goes back to what Martha had asked me earlier about, you know, and I'm still talking, it's been 2 years, and can I still eat this stuff? And part of it is, for me, you know, you'd say, well, don't you care about feeling good? You know, I do care about it, and I think I still have the mentality of being able to get away with it because the lack of sleep. I had 2 hours of sleep last night. I got to bed really late, and then I got up early, and my son broke his leg, and I take him to get an X-ray, take him to get it, you know, get a boot put on it, and this all this stuff, and I had the backup of a whole bunch of other stuff to do, and I feel fine. Do I sound like I'm going on 2 hours of sleep?
My God, no. And he broke his leg?
Yeah, he broke his fibula. So,
oh, my God.
Came off his skateboard, twisted it, and broke it. And, you know, yesterday I spent a couple hours with him trying to work on it and doing some, you know, various energy medicine and therapies and things like that on him. And I said, we'll see how it is in the morning. I think it's probably broken, but let's just see how it is in the morning. And I looked and went, and then we got him an X-ray, and sure enough, that was it. So I was hoping it was just sprained, but then I'd take him to the orthopedist because I wanted to be sure. I'm not trained in bone setting, and you know, these days they just put them in boots. There's no bone setting. I could have done it myself, but I just, you know, I wanted to make sure. And of course, he wanted to go to, you know, the bone doctor rather than to have the mommy doctor tell him what to do. So yeah. So, but anyway, the point is that if I have to weigh it out, if I can keep my blood sugar managed by giving up fruit, I'd rather give up fruit than have to give up my awake time. I know it's sad, but that's kind of where it comes to. Do I have to sleep? And not that I don't sleep. The other night I slept for 12 hours and I do it, but there's nights where it's just like, you know, I have so much I want to get done. I just don't go to sleep. And I found that the balance that I can do is that I just have to be really careful and not need any carbs. And so if I wanted to, and I will at some point make that decision that I will do it all, but at this point that's been my choice, you know, trying to balance it all and be a mom and be a business owner and, you know, deal with my patients and be, you know, all these different roles. I like being awake and full of energy and being productive more than I like eating high carbohydrate foods. So that's been my choice.
And
anyway,
that's been your single most important thing to stay away from too. That was your biggest energy zapper, the carbs, the high carb, high glycemic foods.
Exactly. Exactly. And as long as I stay away from them, I feel great. And not to say that I wouldn't be more, and I really should be watching it more because of the family history and all. And that's what we're going to be working with your patients, is looking at those trade-offs, right?
Right.
But some of them don't have that choice. Right, this guy's sleeping and he wants to eat his carbs, but his blood glucose is still not in control. So that's where we have to really, it's like negotiating with people and doing little trade-offs. Well, we'll try this for another week and then we can try that, and helping them to really get to the point where they say, like one of my patients said to me a few years ago, she said, "You ruined Cheetos for me." And I just laughed, and I looked at her, and she said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "When I first started working with you, that was the hardest thing. I'd be really good at home, and then I'd go out to these little parties, my little girlfriend gatherings, and they'd put Cheetos out, and I just couldn't resist them. And then you went through and you explained, you know, in some of your lectures how those hydrogenated fats affect and how this affects and how that affects. And now every time I go to eat a Cheeto, all I see is this messy stuff going on inside my body that I don't want to happen, and I won't touch them." I said, "Good. I did my job."
Exactly. You're
welcome.
Your response should have been, "You're welcome."
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. Well, I mean, and she was like now 123 pounds instead of 183, right?
Oh,
and
well.
She was right. She was healthy and she was energetic and she looked phenomenal at her, you know, age of 70, whatever she was. And so it was worth it. But that's the kind of thing, the mentality. You don't want to be like alienating people by telling them don't eat this and don't do that, but educating them about how that works in the body, what it's doing to them. Like, what is it when Casey said, "Oh, you know, eating meat, it's acidic." Well, she went into how, you know, it can mess up your kidneys and rob your bones and all that. When they understand that,
right,
when they understand how it works, they're more likely to make the decision from a place of desire rather than from a place of deprivation.
Right, exactly. And the decisions that they are able to form with their own reasoning process,
right,
are the ones that they are going to go with. You could sit there all day long and go, Cheetos is bad, or candy bars
exactly
are bad for you. They don't hear that. That doesn't make
right
sense to so many people. And
right,
until they understand the process for the reason why they're bad, then, you know.
Right,
that's the
thing. If you sit down and explain, "Let me tell you what happens in your body when you eat a Cheeto. So this is what happens, and then it does this, and then it does that." And then they're more likely to say, "Well, I don't think I want that."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, anyway.
There you go.
Well, it looks like there's no more questions, and
no,
so thank you for coming out and very stimulating discussions, and I look forward to I'm so behind schedule in getting this thing out about the event, but there's been so much else going on to distract my attention, and it will go out this week for sure. We'll be announcing a teleclass on either tomorrow. I haven't heard back from my assistant who's doing that, Stacy, and see if she finished the opt-in page for it. But we're going to do a teleseminar next week, and we'll be announcing the registration for the seminar next week on that, but you guys get free tickets, so we'll be announcing it to you sooner. You guys get 2 free tickets, so you can bring a colleague, friend, spouse, family member, mother, patient, client, whoever you want to bring. You get to bring somebody along with you. So, I mean, I wouldn't bring, it should be somebody who is in the health field or aspiring to be a health practitioner, because it's not going to be at the level of just, you know, your average person who's like, you know, a truck driver eating Cheetos and has no clue. It's really geared towards practitioners and improving, you know, the effectiveness of the things you're doing in your practice and going in depth into certain topics that are very exciting and fascinating. Okay?
Sounds great.
All right. I'm going to open up the line so everybody can say goodbye to each other. Thank you for coming out tonight, and we'll have a great evening, and we'll talk to you soon. We'll have a Before Be Gone call on Thursday night.
Goodbye.
Take care, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Have a wonderful evening.
Bye.
Have a great week. Bye.
Thanks.